Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good afternoon, party people. It's 1:08 here, and it's Free for All Friday. Scoot's got his family in town for a couple days. You heard him say yesterday they're headed out to the beach. Going to be soaking up some rays. He says his grandkids have actually never seen a beach that wasn't the Oregon coast. And if you know anything about beaches in Oregon, those beaches, I don't know, man. I guess technically it's a beach. It's hard to relax on an Oregon beach. It's very windy. It's very cold. It's very grainy. So I hope they have a great time this weekend. You and I are going to have a great time today. I know it. Reach over there and turn it up. This is what you've been working for. Like I said, it's Free for All Friday. And on Free for All Friday, that means, you know, we're going to take kind of a relaxed approach to the show today. I do have John Cuvion from JMC Analytics coming up. We can't not talk about the Democratic National Convention, which concluded last night with Vice President Harris officially accepting her party's nomination for President of the United States. So we're going to talk to John Cuvion. You know this guy. He's been on the show with me before. He's been on Newell's show. He's part of our election coverage here on WWL on election nights. So both party conventions are now in the rearview mirror. The big question on everybody's mind, will Kamala Harris's post-convention polling bounce last until November? Because we know there's going to be a polling bounce. Everybody always gets a polling bounce after the convention. After you're on primetime television for a week and everybody comes out and says how great you are and tells America your story and how much they love you and how excited they are to vote for you, you always see a bounce in the polls. So Donald Trump saw that. And now Kamala Harris will see a bounce of her own. But is it going to last until November? And this is a difficult thing for people to predict because, you know, there has never really been a presidential election in modern history, certainly quite like this one, where you have, a candidate who completely face plants at the first debate, embarrasses himself and everybody supporting him by doing just a poor job at the debate. Just a short while later, his opponent is shot in the ear in an attempted assassination attempt. Just a short while after that, candidate A decides he's not going to run. He's going to drop out of the race. A couple hours later, he endorses his vice president. And a month later, the polls have completely reversed. What's up is down, north is south. And now Kamala Harris is leading Donald Trump by a greater margin than Donald Trump ever led Joe Biden. So it's difficult for forecasters to expect what's going to happen next. So we're going to talk to the best guy we know, John Cuvion. He's going to be on with us in just a couple minutes. Is the honeymoon going to end? Is the Democratic ticket going to come back to earth? Is there anything anybody can do to motivate undecided voters wherever they are? Are they under the desk? Are they in the hayloft? I don't know. Where are the people who honestly haven't made up their mind yet? They must exist, but I can't imagine they're in great enough number to do much at this moment. So I don't know. This is a phenomenon that I'm going to talk with John about, the low elasticity in the electorate. That means there just aren't that many people who haven't decided and are still persuadable. So it becomes a get out the vote operation. All you can hope to do is motivate people that would probably already be voting for you to get out and vote. That's a much bigger pool of voters than, you know, people who know they're going to vote but just haven't picked which candidate they like best yet. That's a smaller pool compared to the number of Republican and Democratic and Independent and no party voters that, you know, just might not feel motivated to go to the polls at all. Make no mistake, friends, this is going to be a GOTV operation, especially in Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. What was the moment from the DNC that sticks out most in your mind? If you watched Kamala Harris's speech, I think you saw what the rest of us did. She did a good job making the case for herself. She doesn't look at all like the same candidate she did 4 years ago. And I think if you're, you know, zooming out and looking at this from strictly a sort of, you know, campaign strategy angle, she crushed it last night. And the whole convention kind of crushed it. Now, maybe this isn't your candidate. Maybe you don't jive with Democratic policies, don't like Democrats in general. It's hard to say with a straight face that they didn't just have an extremely successful convention. So we'll talk to John a little bit about that. But I did want to hear from you, of course. We'll talk to John in a minute, but I always want to hear from you on the Oaken Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. The number is 504-260-1870. You should have that in your phone on speed dial if you don't already. I would love to just get your top line reaction to what you saw, whether you're a Kamala Harris voter or a Donald Trump voter or a RFK Jr. voter. I think you're about to have sort of an interesting afternoon here. At 3:10, we're going to have Matthew on the phone. Matthew in Ukraine, you know, our Ukraine correspondent. He was the 2023 Scoot on the Air Person of the Year. Our audience, our very smart audience, elected Matthew as the Person of the Year because of what he's doing in service of freedom and democracy. Not here in America, but on the other side of the planet. Made a huge personal sacrifice to join up with a legion of fighters that were initially fighting Russians in eastern Ukraine. I'm in pretty constant contact with Matthew. We speak on an encrypted app. And he told me about a day or so after the invasion into the Kursk Oblast. And that is part of Russia. If geography is not your thing, Kursk is part of Russia. So now we've got Ukrainian forces actually going into Russian territory where they had previously not been. And I start seeing photos and images from this in the news. And I wonder, God, you know, I wonder if Matthew's over there. And sure enough, he sent me a photograph of a bunch of Russian POWs that his unit had caught and had taped them up with yellow and blue duct tape, which I thought was delightful. And I asked him, what's going to happen to those Russian POWs? And he says, well, you know, they're going to get three meals in a cot and they're just going to kind of cool their heels until they can be exchanged in a prisoner swap. Because there are, of course, prisoners of war that the Russians have and everybody wants their guys back. So I think there is a big difference between the way the Ukrainian POWs are treated versus the way the Russian POWs are treated. So we'll ask Matthew a little bit about that. If there's anything you want me to ask Matthew, I'm happy to chuck that in for you. We have the whole hour with him starting at 3:10, and I'll keep him as long as I can. If there's anything you want me to ask Matthew, anything you want to communicate to him, the way to do it is, of course, the Oaken Heart Jewelers Talking Text Line. I'll take any calls you have at any time during the day today. You know, I love your texts. I want your text. I'm going to read 100% of the text messages that you send to me today. I'm going to reply to as many as I can. And the very best ones, I'm going to read on the air. So make them count. Coming up at 4 o'clock, we got Sports Talk with Bobby, Jeff, and Steve. The Cajun Cannon and crew are going to discuss the Saints' open practice in the Superdome and take a look at some of the biggest roster battles heading into the preseason finale. Yeah, you're right. That's Sunday. With a very odd 1 p.m. kickoff. I don't totally understand how the NFL decides that we're going to do kickoff at 1 instead of noon or 3:30, but that's a job for people smarter and richer than me, so I'm not going to worry too much about it. We got 3 hours of good, clean vibes coming up. Hope you stick with us. I'm Ian Hoke, sitting in for Scoot. He'll be back on Wednesday, but until then, I'm not locked in here with you. You're locked in here with me.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Right back. I think this might be a song they're singing at Kamala Harris headquarters right now. I know Beyonce is officially, you know, the person who's got like the official campaign song, but this is relevant. All right. Over here on the Oaken Heart Jewelers Talking Text Line, I got a couple people on hold. Please stick around, folks. I'll get to you as soon as I wrap up this interview with John Cuvion. Here's a text message that says, as someone who is not a Democrat, I also thought she gave a great speech last night. Very engaging, didn't go off topic, flowed nicely, wasn't planning on her being so likable. Here's a text that says, the speech she gave last night was written by someone else, and it was full of lies. And not once did she mention how she was going to fix the out-of-control inflation and the crisis at the southern border. The speeches are always written by somebody else. Nobody's out here writing their own speeches for these conventions. And the speeches aren't really policy speeches. They're supposed to be, a kind of vibe check. And I think she did that. Here's a text that says, the moment that stuck out most to me was how young Oprah Winfrey looked. Boy, talk about it. I can't believe that woman is a grand 70 years old. She is killing it. Joining me on the line right now is John Cuvion. He's a Louisiana-based pollster and the founder of JMC Analytics and Polling. John, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on your show.
Anytime, every time. Hey, reading from your website, winwithjmc.com, in the aftermath of the Biden withdrawal, the Harris campaign benefited from a three-week honeymoon that involved both a smoothly executed rollout of her campaign and a leak-free vice presidential selection process. She has also received some incremental benefit from an error-free convention. While we don't have complete polling data until next week, a seven-day average of national polling data as of this morning shows that since last week, a 1.4% lead for the Harris-Walz ticket a week ago has now expanded to a 2.3% lead. John, I do want to get more to contemporary polling in this race, but I would love to start out today setting the record straight on polling accuracy in the 2016 and 2020 races. Conventional wisdom holds that the polls were way off in both of those cases, badly underestimating support for Donald Trump. To what degree is that true, sir?
I would disagree with the way and badly parts.
Okay.
One of the things you have to appreciate, and I actually, by the way, wrote postmortems about this in the aftermath of both the 2016 and the 2020 presidential elections. So I think the first thing that confuses people when you're talking about polling averages, you really have to look at it in two universes. One is the national poll. And, of course, you and I know that national popular vote does not elect the president, but organizations do poll nationally. But the second way you have to look at it is the state-by-state polling. So with regards to 2016, it's almost like bringing back when I wrote this article, the national poll was actually on the mark. It showed Hillary Clinton up 2 points. And this, by the way, was polls taken a week before the election. So we're not talking about like an October 1st poll. Where the 2016 polls got it wrong was at the state-by-state level. In other words, they missed the ball in the blue wall states. Mm-hmm. They missed the mark in Florida. They missed the mark in Nevada. But I also think when you're talking about these misses, to me a polling miss is, let's say you said someone was going to win a state by, let's say, 5, and that person lost the state by 2. Well, that's a 7-point miss. That's clearly outside of the polling margin of error. I'm much harsher on that type of miss than, say, a swinging state like Florida and Nevada, where the polls may have shown a candidate up by 1 and that candidate lost by 0.4%. And by the way, that kind of closeness is what happened in these swingy states in 2016. It wasn't quite as bad at the state level in 2020, but there was a bigger problem there, and that was the polls had the Biden number right for some time. In other words, he stayed at about 50% for the last couple months of the presidential election cycle, and I was logging this data in every day. Where they missed the mark was the Trump vote at the national and state level. In other words, I was consistently seeing Trump in the low 40s, and of course, as you'll remember, he got closer to 47% of the vote, which that to me is a much bigger problem. And there's one poll in particular that is always used as the Exhibit A for just really bad polling. You'll remember a poll, I think it was ABC News Washington Post. It showed Trump down double digits in Wisconsin when the final result was far closer. That to me is a polling miss.
Yeah.
So like I said, I just wanted to kind of give you a little more detail in addition to the often believed, you know, the pollsters missed, let's not have polling anymore, blah, 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 mantra that I hear a lot.
Great. Great. That's perfect. A good explanation. Thank you so much. So what are firms doing then to improve accuracy at the state-by-state level in 2024? What was it? The Wisconsin Project? I read something about that the other day. All these Democratic firms get together that traditionally don't work together, but now they realize that maybe for the sake of the industry, you know, they need to try to be more accurate in the public's view. What are people doing differently this time around to try to get a more accurate view?
Well, to tell you the truth, I'm not really convinced about the what they're doing differently, because, of course, that would involve getting into kind of like comparing notes and talking to pollsters and so forth, many of whom keep their data private. Mm-hmm. But I could tell you conceptually, I think there are two problems with regards to polling accuracy, especially when we're talking about Donald Trump. Number one is making sure you get an appropriate level of college-educated versus non-college-educated respondents. Because one of the things I saw when I was polling, I was doing a national poll that was used in consideration of who should get allowed in the Milwaukee debate last year. And depending on what you wanted to have as the percentage of respondents who had a college degree, it made a big difference in terms of what the Trump percentage was. So that's issue number one. Issue number two, which I think goes under the radar, but I will happily force it above the radar, I have a different definition of likely voter than probably nearly every other pollster does.
Fascinating.
In other
tell
words,
us.
You, and I'd be happy to tell you, and this is a big philosophical thing where I don't mind being the lone person out there. I think far too many pollsters think of likely voters in terms of, well, let's just call a registered voter and ask them if they plan to vote. Let's be honest. How many people are going to admit to a pollster that they're not planning to vote? I can personally tell you that I have screened out maybe 3 to 5% of voters with that question. You know as well as I do, you do not have 95 to 97% turnout.
Right.
The metric I use instead, and this is where I don't mind being different, and it's gotten me through my career for the last 14 years, so I can't complain. I look at a person's voting history. So in other words, there's a lot of garbage in the voter rolls. If you have voted at least once, starting with the last presidential election, which right now the clock is November of 2020, I think of you as a legitimate voter. And then, of course, if you live in places like, say, St. Tammany Parish that are fast growing, you do have new voters who you have to account for. But if you last voted, let's say, in 2016, it's extremely unlikely you're going to show up in this presidential election. So weeding out the garbage, to me, is part of what must be done to determine who is a likely voter. And so that's the other half of the coin in terms of the what could or should or is being done to rectify for past polling misses. But I think also, too, it's important to educate your listeners that you're always going to have some polling error. And, of course, that's why we talk about the margin of error, where depending on what the sample size is, you're going to have some wiggle room. And so I think that's the other concept that's important is to understand. You're never going to have these polls that nail a race within one-tenth of a percentage point of the actual vote. Unless, of course, theoretically, you did a poll saying here in Louisiana at 7:59 p.m., you know, in that case, it would theoretically represent what voters are thinking as they go to on election day.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great. So
lots
such
of,
good
lots
stuff.
Of information to digest, but sometimes I think that a little bit of polling 101 needs to be disseminated just because there's so much misinformation out there.
Absolutely. That is a core part of what I wanted to do today, John. Like it with this audience and on this program, I often have to defend pollsters and polling against people who think that it's useless or it's skewed or it's biased or somebody's always got their thumb on the scale. So if you feel like leaning right into just the basics of how this works, that's great with me. I did want to ask you.
I can't tell you one basic, which I think is important part of polling education. Mm-hmm. I mean, you always have people throw darts at pollsters, and I just kind of shrug it off. The most important concept to me is I'm interested in what polls with capital S say than a single poll. So in other words, polling averages like what you have on 538 or Real Clear Politics, that to me is a better number because you're looking at all these different pollsters who have their different philosophies mm-hmm. of how to poll.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay. Let's talk about young voters, people who are cell phone only households. I'm of the sort of younger generation. I think most people my age and my peers would rather pick up an unpinned grenade than answer a phone call from a number we don't recognize. How do you poll those voters?
Ah, an excellent question, to which I will give you a coherent and unequivocal answer. There is a cultural shift I have seen, which is probably about a cutoff of about 40 years of age. People above that will pick up the phone and talk to a live operator. If you're under 40, good luck. And that's where you have alternate means of polling that have to come in, which would be like internet surveys. My personal preference is texting cell phone users. And because when you text it to somebody, a text a poll to somebody, it enables to take the poll at his or her leisure, and texted polls go much quicker. So I've found that's how you get an appropriate representation of younger voters. And by the way, the other part of the equation, which you implied by using the term cell phone voters, I pretty much use a 70% cell phone sample nowadays. I certainly would not, you know, have anything less than that, because virtually everybody does have a cell phone, even though you have some holdouts who still have landlines.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay. So Harris's lead over Trump is increasing, but it's still relatively narrow. We see what we call low elasticity in the electorate, meaning there just aren't very many people who haven't decided who to vote for and are still persuadable. Do you see Kamala Harris having any ability to further increase her lead, or, on the other hand, for Trump to get back in front?
Perhaps in the next week, yes, and I'll tell you why. One of the things you have to appreciate with polling is there's a time element to it. In other words, the amount of time it takes to field a survey, the amount of time it takes the data to come back, the amount of time for an analyst to make some sense out of the numbers, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, this is not a 10-minute exercise. So to give you a real-world application of what I just mentioned, even though polls that I've been including in this average that show the 2.3%, I would say the cutoff is probably like early to mid this week, which meant the start of the Democratic convention. Mm-hmm. To accurately convey what people think after Kamala Harris's acceptance speech, you're going to have pollsters out in the field today, tomorrow, Sunday. That probably means Monday, Tuesday, I'm going to start to see polling data. So in other words, you don't have that instant, you know, feedback. It does take time to do a quality poll to make sure the sample is representative of the population. And where I'm going with this, and a very long answer to your original question, is I do think there's probably going to be about another half point to a point improvement in Kamala Harris's average, mm-hmm. which perhaps might be knocked down a little bit by this late-breaking development of RFK Jr. dropping out and likely endorsing Donald Trump.
Yeah. Okay. So with Harris still, you think she's at 2.3 today. She may extend to like 2.8 if you're not factoring
2.5
in RFK.
To 3, yes.
Okay, great.
Yes.
So what do those numbers right now suggest about her chances in those swingy states, which, of course, we're getting very familiar with? That's Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, mm-hmm. Nevada, North Carolina, Wisconsin, and the Keystone State, Pennsylvania. How big of a national lead does one have to have in order to start pulling those swing states out of reach for your opponent?
I'm of the opinion that if you're a Democrat, that you really need to get your national popular vote lead above 3%. One of the most unspoken aspects of the 2020 presidential election, Joe Biden actually won by 4.5 percentage points. Included in that victory were some very, very narrow leads, and I'm talking about less than 1 percentage point in places like Arizona and Georgia. Now, I'm of the opinion those are pretty much going to flip to Donald Trump, which puts him up to 262 electoral votes. I don't think North Carolina is going to flip either. It's going to stay with Trump. So then that brings us to, okay, could another state flip to Trump and put him at 270? The thing about that is the closer that Harris is to a 0% lead, the more likely I would expect that, say, like a Pennsylvania or a Michigan would flip, because you can't have something happen nationally that is not also reflected in swing state polling. Mm-hmm. In other words, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin are part of our great country, so any movement towards the blue or red in those states is to some extent going to be occurring in those states as well.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay. Early voting is right around the corner. Many states are going to start in-person early voting in next month, in September. How does the rise in early voting affect the timing and strategy of polling firms?
Another one of my favorite topics, which I evangelize about. So, to be blunt about it, the old model of planning your campaign around Election Day to me is discarded, or is should be discarded. Because what happened in 2020, nearly 70% of the vote was cast before Election Day. What that means in plain terms, and by the way, in Louisiana, we're going to be starting on October 18th. Mail-in ballots will probably hit like the third or fourth week of September. What that means in plain terms is if you're trying to put your best messaging of for your candidate a week before November 5th, you're wasting your time. You really need to do that messaging, I would say, mid to late September, as people are starting to formulate their opinions and as mail ballots are going out and before in-person early voting starts, because 46% of Louisianians voted early in 2020. Now, some of that's pandemic-related, but a little trivia for you, which you could appreciate being in New Orleans. I'm of the opinion, what was that hurricane? It was Hurricane Delta, I think, the one that went up New Orleans and Jefferson the last week of October in 2020.
Oh, Zeta, maybe?
Yeah. Zeta, that's
yep.
it.
Yep.
I am convinced that had that hurricane not gone up to those parishes when they did, we would have cracked a million early votes. Because, as you can appreciate, we have a hurricane going on. You're not exactly going to have early voting offices open. Mm-hmm. Kind of a safety issue, to be polite.
Right.
But more to the point, though, the important thing is you really have to think of Election Day in terms of influencing the maximum number of people as really right about now to right about mid-October, as opposed to thinking you could do some magic communication, say, on November 4th.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay.
Particularly
great.
Since North Carolina starts early voting September 6th and on September 20th, three states, Minnesota and Virginia being two of those three, start in-person early voting on September 20th.
Wow. September 10th is the first debate. How do you think polling might shift based on the debate performance? If either Vice President Harris or President Trump kind of steps on the rake as badly as Joe Biden did back in June, would you expect a similar effect on that candidate's polling?
I do. Now, I'm not expecting like a 5 to 10 point movement, but I could see a couple points, because the thing you have to appreciate is thus far, Kamala Harris has had the great advantage of introducing herself and opponents' missteps without her being really challenged. But you put her up against Donald Trump on September 10th, there is the risk that she may not come off well, or she may come off really well. But I think September 10th is really a critical inflection point in terms of, could she pick up a couple points, or could Donald Trump pick up a couple points? Because you really haven't put the two of them together quite yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I can't wait for that. That's going to be really interesting. Okay, last one, John. What advice would you give to our audience broadly, and we're back to polling 101 here, about how they should interpret polling data in the next 74 days? What should we be wary about? What are the pitfalls, obstacles, opportunities for greater understanding? Help us out here, man.
When a person on social media gets all excited about a single poll and how it's a game changer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, I tend to question that person's motives. As opposed to if you were to say, well, according to such and such average, it shows that the presidential race has moved this many number of points in these swing states and nationally. As you appreciate, the example I just gave has a lot more detail than just some partisan trying to spin a narrative. So, like I said, the polls with capital S is far more important than a single poll. And that's the advice I would give to those trying to follow this race. I would also say, if you have the time, try to get diametrically opposed viewpoints, which is spend a little time on MSNBC and Fox, and you always figure the truth is somewhere in between the two.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Great. And also, I think just in my own observation, people pay no attention at all to the polling firm and who paid for it. And I wonder if you could impart a little bit of advice to us about how to determine that. If I see something that says Kamala Harris is up by 30 points in Pennsylvania, and I go and see that the polling firm that conducted that is, you know, Democrats Are Great LLC, I mean, that's kind of a red flag, right?
Right. Yes. And that's that fine print you'll typically see if you have a news organization that's talking about a poll. They will put the fine print in the bottom, you know, such and such did the poll. It was conducted over these dates, such and such margin of error. Ooh, that's another red flag, too. I've been hearing stories in social media about polls being released that were conducted 2 weeks ago. If you are a pollster, I'm automatically suspicious of somebody who sits on a poll for 2 weeks, because the world, I mean, think of how much the world has changed since late June.
Truly.
So if to use an extreme example, you had a poll that you had released in late June that showed, I don't know, Trump up 10 points in Massachusetts. Well, besides that number being absurd on its surface, the fact that it's in late June was when the polling was done. That's another red flag, because the world is rapidly changing and you cannot rely on stale information.
Wow. John Cuvion, you've just given us a masterclass in understanding polling data and all the different angles therein. How can people follow your work once this conversation's over?
Absolutely. So what I like to do on my blog site, winwithjmc.com, I've been posting articles every Friday about what I see about the presidential race. The other way is for those who like Twitter, or X as it's known currently, my handle is at winwithjmc.com. And I like to talk about things. I guess my specialty is debunking the conventional wisdom, like a few minutes ago when I talked about how I think this is going to be a low-interest election, and here are the data points I think that point to that. That's the kind of stuff I like to do, because oftentimes I find that political data gets kind of drowned in groupthink, and no one really critically looks at it like I like to do.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay, that's winwithjmc.com, and also winwithjmc on Twitter. It is known as Twitter and will always be known as Twitter on this program.
Yeah.
John, thank you for your time, your work, and your way. Have a great weekend. Stay cool.
My pleasure. Take care.
All right. My guest is John Cuvion from JMC Analytics and Polling. After we come back here, we're going to speak to Charles in Ponchatoula and Tracy out in New Orleans East. We'll be right back after this. I'm Ian Hoken for Scoop. Stick around. Okay. Just in from the Washington Post, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. will endorse Donald Trump, according to a court filing. He'll be making an announcement shortly. We'll see if we can carry that live for you as soon as he begins. We'll just tune in for that real briefly. Let's go to the Oakenheart Jewelers Talking Text Line. If you want to react to anything you just heard from my conversation with John Cuvion or anything else, it's Free for All Friday, so what the hell. Let's go to Charles in Ponchatoula. Charles, you're on the air. Good afternoon.
Thank you. Okay, the RNC, or the, should I call it really, the Donald Trump pep rally was boring compared to the DNC.
You thought it was boring, huh? Did you watch the speeches and you were bored by them, or was it just, I mean, there were far fewer like celebrities and musical appearances and stuff. What bored you?
Donald Trump expectancy took, what, an hour and a half?
Yeah, he went long.
I was boring by myself.
Yeah, indeed. Well, what were your thoughts? What else stood out from you from these two conventions, Charles?
At least the Democrat shows harmony and spirit. They kept saying we're looking at the future, and Donald Trump never said nothing about the future, but how gloomy everything would be.
Yeah, you're right. Got an argument there. Charles, thanks a lot for listening. Call anytime. Let's go to Tracy in New Orleans East. Tracy, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir. What's on your mind?
I want to touch on what my man was talking about earlier. First of all, I'm a Democrat, full-blown Democrat. I don't care what happens, I'm voting Democratic. My wife and I, we watch the convention all 4 days. I'm a Barack and Michelle fan, but when Oprah came on and Oprah mentioned the New Orleans Four, brought tears to my eyes because she hit close to home. So if you can understand that, you know, I was touched by that.
Yeah, say more about that, Tracy. She touched close to home for you. What does that mean for us?
No, I'm just saying because she mentioned New Orleans, you know.
Oh, sure, when she mentioned us. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. and that really got me there. Yeah. But I really called today to talk about the astronauts that are stranded in space.
what do you think about that?
My question is, do they get overtime for that, and who pays for it?
I hope they get overtime. You got to at least get time and a half or something. You don't get to go home for... Yeah, well, so what is it? Fill us in, Tracy, because I don't know the details of this. These astronauts were only supposed to be up there for like a couple days or a week, and now they're stuck there for months, something like that?
Right. They're not coming home until February next year.
Bruh. I don't know. What do you think is a fair trade-off then? If they, you know, maybe they get overtime, but I don't know. When they come back to Earth, send them to the Bahamas or something, or give them a new car. I don't know. What do you think's fair?
I don't know. I don't know what's fair for them, but they deserve something.
Yeah, maybe there's some sort of, you know, golden parachute. And maybe they get a watch or something at least.
Something, I don't know, but that's all I have.
Tracy, thanks a lot for listening. Appreciate you being a part of the show, and have a great weekend. We'll step away one more time and come back before we hand it off to WWL First News at 2 o'clock. And then at 2:10, we'll do the news bomb. We'll have some fresh audio from the DNC and the campaign trail, and we'll all hear that together. And we will still be keeping an eye out for Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s live stream here, where he says he's going to drop out of the race and endorse Donald Trump. Does that move the needle for you? I don't know. You tell me. 504-260-1870. Give me a call. Give me a text. I'm Ian Hoken for Scoot. BRB. All right. About 4 minutes to go until we hit the 2 o'clock news here. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is speaking now to the press in Arizona. He's going to drop out and endorse Donald Trump. I have no idea what we're about to listen to, but let's tune in here.
I'm sorry to keep everybody waiting. 16 months ago, in April of 2023, I launched my campaign for President of the United States. I began this journey as a Democrat, the party of my father, my uncle, the party which I pledged my own allegiance to long before I was old enough to vote. I attended my first Democratic convention at the age of six.
Get to the point.
And back then, the Democrats were the champions of the Constitution, of civil rights. The Democrats stood against authoritarianism, against censorship, against colonialism, imperialism, and unjust wars. We were the party of labor, of the working class. The Democrats were the party of government transparency and the champion of the environment. Our party was the bulwark against big money interests and corporate power. True to its name, it was the party of democracy. As you know, I left that party in October because it had departed so dramatically from the core values that I grew up with. It had become the party of war, censorship, corruption, big pharma, big tech, big ag, and big money. When it abandoned democracy by canceling the primary to conceal the cognitive decline of the sitting president, I left the party to run as an independent.
It's not why they canceled. Forget it.
The mainstream of American politics and journalism derided my decision. Conventional wisdom said that it would be impossible even to get on the ballot as an independent because each state poses an insurmountable tangle of arbitrary rules for collecting signatures. I would need over 1 million signatures, something no presidential candidate in history had ever achieved. And then I'd need a team of attorneys and millions of dollars to handle all the legal challenges from the DNC. The naysayers told us that we were climbing a glass version of Mount Impossible. So the first thing I want to tell you is that we proved them wrong. We did it because
a glass version of Mount Impossible.
Mainstream media organs.
All right, Coleman, let's turn this down for a minute. Hey, listen, we'll have more audio from Robert F. Kennedy's whatever's going on over there. He is going to endorse Donald Trump by all accounts, so we'll get your reaction to that. I got no guests in the next hour. I'm just going to talk to you, so give me a call. Shoot me a text, 504-260-1870. If you were a Robert F. Kennedy Jr. voter, are you happy with his endorsement? Do you wish that he was not making an endorsement, or do you wish that he was endorsing Kamala Harris? If you are the little worm that is still inside RFK Jr.'s brain, are you happy with the endorsement? We want to hear from you. Give me a call. Give me a text. And, of course, we'll have some more audio from not just this press conference, but also from the Democratic National Convention. And then at 3 o'clock, don't sleep on this. We're going to speak to Matthew in Ukraine. He's going to be on the line with information. He's been in Russia as part of that incursion into Kursk Oblast. That's must-see listening. Be right back. Okay. Just in from the Washington Post, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. will endorse Donald Trump, according to a court filing. He'll be making an announcement shortly. We'll see if we can carry that live for you as soon as he begins. We'll just tune in for that real briefly. Let's go to the Oakenheart Jewelers Talking Text Line. If you want to react to anything you just heard from my conversation with John Kubion or anything else, it's Free for All Friday, so what the hell. Let's go to Charles in Ponchatoula. Charles, you're on the air. Good afternoon.
Thank you. Okay, the RNC, or the, or should I call it really, the Donald Trump pep rally was boring compared to the DNC.
You thought it was boring, huh? Did you watch the speeches and you were bored by them, or was it just, I mean, there were far fewer, like, celebrities and musical appearances and stuff. What bored you?
Donald Trump expectancy took, what, an hour and a half?
Yeah, he went long.
I was boring by myself.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. Well, what were your thoughts? What else stood out from you from these two conventions, Charles?
At least the Democrats showed harmony and spirit. They kept saying, we're looking at the future, and now Trump never said nothing about the future, but how gloomy the past, how gloomy everything would be.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Got an argument there. Charles, thanks a lot for listening. Call anytime. Let's go to Tracy in New Orleans East. Tracy, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir. What's on your mind?
I want to touch on what my man was talking about earlier. First of all, I'm a Democrat, full-blown Democrat. I don't care what happens. I'm voting Democratic. My wife and I, we watch the convention all 4 days. I'm a Barack and Michelle fan, but when Oprah came on and Oprah mentioned the New Orleans Four, brought tears to my eyes because she hit close to home. So if you can understand that, you know, I was touched by that.
Yeah, say more about that, Tracy. She touched close to home for you. What does that mean for us?
No, I'm just saying because she mentioned New Orleans, you know.
Oh, sure, when she mentioned us. Yeah, yeah, of course.
Yeah. And that really got me there. Yeah. But I really called today to talk about the astronauts that are stranded in space.
what do you think about
my
that?
My question is, do they get overtime for that, and who pays for it?
I hope they get overtime. You got to at least get time and a half or something. You don't get to go home for... Yeah, so what is it? Fill us in, Tracy, because I don't know the details of this. These astronauts were only supposed to be up there for... like a couple days or a week, and now they're stuck there for months, something like that?
Right. They're not coming home till February next year.
Bruh. Yeah. I don't know. What do you think is a fair trade-off then? If they, you know, maybe they get overtime, but I don't know. When they come back to Earth, send them to the Bahamas or something, or give them a new car? I don't know. What do you think's fair?
I don't know. I don't know what's fair for them, but they deserve something, bruh.
Yeah, maybe there's some sort of, you know, golden parachute. Maybe they get a watch or something at least.
Something, I don't know, but that's all I have.
Tracy, thanks a lot for listening. Appreciate you being a part of the show, and have a great weekend. We'll step away one more time and come back before we hand it off to WWL First News at 2 o'clock. And then at 2:10, we'll do the news bomb. We'll have some fresh audio from the DNC and the campaign trail, and we'll all hear that together. And we will still be keeping an eye out for Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s live stream here where he says he's going to drop out of the race and endorse Donald Trump. Does that move the needle for you? I don't know. You tell me. 504-260-1870. Give me a call. Give me a text. I'm Ian Hoken for Scoot. BRB. All right. About 4 minutes to go until we hit the 2 o'clock news here. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is speaking now to the press in Arizona. He's going to drop out and endorse Donald Trump. I have no idea what we're about to listen to, but let's tune in here.
I'm sorry to keep everybody waiting. 16 months ago, in April of 2023, I launched my campaign for President of the United States. I began this journey as a Democrat, the party of my father, my uncle, the party which I pledged my own allegiance to long before I was old enough to vote. I attended my first Democratic convention at the age of six.
Get to the point.
And back then, the Democrats were the champions of the Constitution, of civil rights. The Democrats stood against authoritarianism, against censorship, against colonialism, imperialism, and unjust wars. We were the party of labor, of the working class. The Democrats were the party of government transparency and the champion of the environment. Our party was the bulwark against big money interests and corporate power. True to its name, it was the party of democracy. As you know, I left that party in October because it had departed so dramatically from the core values that I grew up with. It had become the party of war, censorship, corruption, big pharma, big tech, big ag, and big money. When it abandoned democracy by canceling the primary to conceal the cognitive decline of the sitting president, I left the party to run as an independent.
It's not why they canceled. Forget it.
The mainstream of American politics and journalism derided my decision. Conventional wisdom said that it would be impossible even to get on the ballot as an independent because each state poses an insurmountable tangle of arbitrary rules for collecting signatures. I would need over 1 million signatures, something no presidential candidate in history had ever achieved. And then I'd need a team of attorneys and millions of dollars to handle all the legal challenges from the DNC. The naysayers told us that we were climbing a glass version of Mount Impossible. So the first thing I want to tell you is that we proved them wrong. We did it because
a glass version of Mount Impossible.
Of mainstream media organs.
All right, Coleman, let's turn this down for a minute. Hey, listen, we'll have more audio from Robert F. Kennedy's whatever's going on over there. He is going to endorse Donald Trump by all accounts, so we'll get your reaction to that. I got no guests in the next hour. I'm just going to talk to you, so give me a call. Shoot me a text, 504-260-1870. If you were a Robert F. Kennedy Jr. voter, are you happy with his endorsement? Do you wish that he was not making an endorsement, or do you wish that he was endorsing Kamala Harris? If you are the little worm that is still inside RFK Jr.'s brain, are you happy with the endorsement? We want to hear from you. Give me a call. Give me a text. And, of course, we'll have some more audio from not just this press conference, but also from the Democratic National Convention. And then at 3 o'clock, don't sleep on this. We're going to speak to Matthew in Ukraine. He's going to be on the line with information. He's been in Russia as part of that incursion into Kursk Oblast. That's must-see listening. Be right back.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.